It was Andy, and he was riding the bear down the middle of the street at a dead run. He was wearing some poor girl's underclothes, too, just to make it interesting. Hungover cowboys came out of the woodwork, lining the street as he tore by on that bear. Ride was short, the bear turned sharply off the street and hit another gear and dumped Andy head first. He made an effort to grab at a section of chain dragged behind the bear, succeeding only in getting drugged for several yards. He leaped to his feet and pulled his skirt off his head.
Help me, boys! I'm afoot!
It was cowboys to their horses while others pursued the bear on foot.
Come on!
Andy led them on like John Brown going to war. Several horsemen blew by Andy, and one of them finally slowed just enough for him to swing up behind.
Come on!
Billy and I raced for the horse corral. We caught up to the crowd at the edge of town. People were running in every direction, but nobody seemed to know where that bear was. Billy and I pulled up to survey the scene around us. No sooner than we had stopped than the bear barreled around the corner of a group of houses. One of the boys pulled in behind him, swinging a loop, causing the bear to swerve and run right through a little yard and tear down 10 feet of cedar picket fence. Bears must be long-winded because it lined back out, heading north with all of us riding for the lead.
He's headed for Ringtown!
Billy and I were jumbled back in the pack, fighting frantically to get to the front. I followed as Billy pushed his paint through the crowd. At the edge of the crowd was Andy. He had dismounted and was standing solemnly before his bear. It was dead. And there was a man on the other side holding a pistol alongside his leg.
That'll be enough, boys.
He was a tough-looking cuss with a big mustache. He eyed the crowd like a mad bull.
Why'd you shoot my bear?
For the general assurance of the peace.
That's Cap Arrington.
Get that bear out of the road. The stage is coming.
Nobody moved. Arrington pointed to Billy, singling him out of the edge of the group with a hawk's gaze.
Do I know you?
Hell if I know.
That's Billy Champion.
I took you for someone else. I was obviously mistaken.
I reckon.
With that, Arrington stepped off, leaving us to mourn over the bear and the end of a grand chase. Andy sat down on the bear, slumped and looking dejected. I watched Arrington as he left. Cap Arrington had made a name for himself with the Frontier Battalion of the Texas Rangers.
What the hell was that all about?
Billy just shrugged his shoulders, and we walked our horses up to Andy. As we reached him, Long Tom stepped forward from the crowd.
You said you were riding that bear, General.
I reckon I did.
Why'd you want to ride a bear?
To say I did it. That's why.
But, why are you wearing women folks' clothes?
I don't know, Long Tom. It must have seemed like the thing to do at the time.
I looked up to see that a stagecoach was right on top of us. I sat my horse right alongside the stage, and when I turned my head, I looked right into one of its windows and found the most beautiful pair of eyes a man ever saw. All I could see were those eyes and a pert little face beneath one of those girly hats. I sat there like I had been struck by lightning. I came out of my stupor, and I realized that I had just seen the girl of my dreams. And there I was, not only consulting with, but enjoying the company of a boy in girly clothes.
Get out of the way, you hairy-legged saddle monkeys!
That girl's look froze me again. I could feel the heat of my embarrassment rushing up my neck. My moment was almost gone, and I could say nothing. I couldn't even swallow. And then, the merest hint of a smile played at the corner of her lips.
Yeah, yeah!
Hey, Tennessee! Someone just said they won't eat my bear!
Damn it, Andy! I ain't from Tennessee!
I only saw once more that day. It's just a brief glimpse and at a distance. She was getting back on the stage as it prepared to leave for Clarendon. Long, Andy and I stood in the front of the Lady Gay, passing the time by watching the stage leave. Billy had disappeared, saying he had business to attend to. Well, not long after the stage left, Billy sauntered up with a cocksure grin on his face. He looked like the hound that had just gotten into the smoke house.
Now, what are you looking so smug about?
That's why you can't play poker, Nate. You just can't read faces.
What do you know that's so funny?
I know you better get ready to ride. We gotta be on the Lazy F by day after tomorrow if we won't work.
What about Long?
Well, they were silly enough to hire Andy, so who knows? Maybe if Long there'd pass some of that liquor around, they'd take him on.
That's all right, boys. I don't want...
The only reason they hired Andy was to run all the bears out of the country. He sure as hell ain't good for anything besides killing horses.
By gosh, I'm the genuine article.
You couldn't find your ass with both hands.
I've already gotten work.
What are you gonna do?
Freight supplies.
For who?
Myself.
Where's your outfit?
I got me a good wagon and 3 yoke oxen.
Like hell you...
Shut up, Andy. Where'd you get the team?
Bought it off a sick man up at the fort. Traded for part of it and bought the rest on credit.
Well, forgive us for being nosy, Long, but that man must have been awful sick. You don't look like any businessman I ever saw before.
He was just about to die, but it was the whiskey that sealed the deal.
Oh, you beat all, Long.
Boys ought to throw in with me. I know where there's a double wagon rig that could be bought right. With all the ranches starting up in this country, there's going to be a lot of business for Teamsters.
What the hell is wrong with you? We ain't freighters.
Yeah, thanks. That goes for me, too.
Well, maybe when these two are full grown and I can quit wet nursing them, we'll settle down to business, Long.
What's the matter with you, Billy? We're cowboys.
Oh, well, that'd be when I'm too old to sit on a horse. And freighting won't be the business I'm talking about. It'll be whiskey making.
We told Long to look us up sometime and headed south to go work for the Lazy L. Billy and Andy were in high spirits. But I was still thinking of that girl. The stage turned around at Clarendon and headed back to Dodge via Mobeedy and Fort Supply. She was obviously going to Clarendon or somewhere in the vicinity. I cursed myself for getting so wrapped up. Who was I to be thinking of a girl? I didn't have $10 to my name. I had my saddle and gear and the good horse that Billy gave me, but that was all.
What's the matter, Tennessee?
Why are you still calling me that? You know I ain't from Tennessee.
I don't know. Just got a ring to it.
Well, Nate has always been good enough up till now.
I call you by your given name from now on if you quit pouting about that girl.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, to hell you don't. She didn't say a word to you, but one look, and you acted like you was lightning struck.
What? I was just looking.
Uh-huh.
If I thought Dunny could outrun that engine pony of yours, I'd leave you behind.
Well, he can't. But wait till you ride him on Roundup. He's the best cutting horse in Texas. Oh, by the way, I found out her name.
What?
He gave me a grin, a wicked sparkle in his eyes.
Yeah!
What? Dang it, Billy! Yeah!
Two days later, I still wasn't able to get a confession from them. I was beginning to think a whole village of Kiowa squaws wouldn't be able to torture it out of them. Late at night, when we finally were in camp at the Lazy F, I had all but given up. We'd thrown our horses in a headquarter corral and bedded down beside a fire with the Lazy F hands. Just as I was nodding off, he whispered that her name was Barbara Allen, and her daddy had a dry goods store in Clarendon. For 2 weeks, we worked the country to the south and southeast. It was 15 hours a day in the saddle for us. Our floating outfit was bossed by a man by the name of Gruber. He was a withered up little fella who the boys called Hell's Bells, or HB for short. He was easy enough to work with, even if he didn't know which end the cow quit first. Despite his shortcomings as a cattleman, you couldn't help but like him. Our cook was a Mexican they called Carlito. It was a hell of a nickname because he must have weighed about 400 pounds. He had his work cut out for him. The other hand, besides Billy and I, was Dale Martin, a sandy-headed young man with a quick wit. He was a good hand and would put in a day's work here and there, but he seemed a bit shiftless. He had a habit of disappearing from time to time, and despite his popularity among the hands, I could not find it in me to like him. The rough breaks and canyons of that country had slowed the winter's drift, but we still had a lot of cattle wearing brands from far-off places. All cattle not belonging to the range that we were on were placed into the cut herd. The cut herd was driven along with us as the roundup moved, with individual owners' cattle to be relocated back to their ranches when and where it pleased them. The main herd, or herds, belonging to the range we was on, was left behind when we moved to a new piece of country. That country south of the Salt Fork and along the Pease and Tongue Rivers was filling up fast. The Matadors and the Shoe Bars held most of the range we were on, but there were several other smaller operators with crews working. We worked our way east and then north through the Diamond Tail Range. As we left the home range of certain outfits, their main crew fell out to work their own country and prepare for the market drives. However, many of them left a man or two to stay on and follow the general roundup and represent their brand. Our wagon became sort of a pool outfit, and camp continued to grow. We were far off from our home outfits, away from oversight, and we tended to have the rowdiest camp going. We did our work, yeah, but it was often after a long night of merrymaking. One day, after one of the roundup bosses had told us off, or gave working orders to gather a piece of country, Billy and I were working parallel to each other. It was a broken country, and we had to ride closer to each other in order not to overlook any stock. We both topped out on opposite sides of a steep, narrow little canyon at the same time. Billy waved at me and continued along the far side of the canyon rim. As I ambled along, watching the canyon floor below me, I spotted a small pen of cattle in a little cedar thicket at the head of the canyon. I got Billy's attention and motioned at the cattle below us. Billy studied it a minute, and then he began looking for a way down. I found the cattle trail, washed out and running to the canyon floor, and I put my horse to it and hit the bottom in a stir dust. I beat Billy down and I made my way up into the thicket. Sure enough, somebody had built a brush fence across the canyon, the sides and back being so sheer as to form a natural fence. There was a good trickle of water running through the pen from somewhere above. The cattle penned were all 2 and 3 year old steers. There must have been about 30 of them lying there in the shade of the trees. At my approach, they all rose to their feet and fled toward the head of the canyon. I recognized several of the brands, and in fact, the majority of them wore our own Lazy F or hat brand burned into their hides. I rode over to the improvised gate and studied the ground. It was tore up with horse and cattle tracks, all coming from down the canyon to where it emptied into a bigger one about a half a mile away. Billy rode up.
What do you got, Nate?
Somebody's penning steers. And I'd swear I recognized a couple of them from the cut herd.
Looks like some of the boys are making up a little herd.
He eyed me carefully as if measuring what my response would be.
Help me tear down this fence.
Billy held up a hand to stop me.
Hold on there. Let's think this out.
There ain't anything to think out.
But you gotta live in this country. Think about that.
You ain't in on this, are you?
Hell no. I never rustled cattle.
Well, what's holding you up? You ain't one to scare easily.
I don't care to make this my business. You butt your nose into something like this, and you won't ever ride easy without worrying about some Jasper taking a pot shot at you when you least expect it.
What's gotten into you?
I don't recall you complaining when we ran off those Cheyenne ponies.
Stealing from engines is different. They steal enough stock you can't tell who their horses really belong to.
Oh, so stealing from a savage or a thief doesn't count as stealing.
We're taking wages to do a job. And I got enough pride to ride for the brand. You do too, or you used to.
Look, I've had my ear to the ground, and the rumor is that a bunch of foreigners are buying our outfit at book count. Further rumor has it that, as usual, the book count is a whole lot bigger than the actual range count would be.
So, while the bigwigs are getting ready to shice to some foreigners, some of the boys figure to help themselves with it.
Looks like it.
And we should just mind our own business?
It's the best way.
I studied him for a long minute.
Well, shit, goddammit, son of a bitch.
It was far from the best way, but I had to agree. We rode up out of the canyon together. Damned if I didn't feel like a cow thief.
We're gonna have to live with this.
We've all got something to live with, Nate.
We threw our gather on a big plain that evening. I unsaddled my horse and turned him loose to saddle another. I had first guard that evening and had to hustle to get something to eat and my bedroll laid out. No sooner had I started to wolf down my food than Andy flopped down beside me.
That Carlito's some cook.
I had to admit that any man who could keep you from growing tired of eating beans 7 days a week surely possessed a high level of culinary skill.
You have a rough one?
Nah, that black bucked me off again this morning, but I rode him the second time round.
You picked him.
Yeah, he'll be all right. A new outfit came in today, and some of them gave us relief on the day herd. We had a pretty good poker game under that wagon sheet.
Sounds like you had it rough.
We had it good until y'all started coming in with your gatherers, and we had to quit before HB or one of the other big chiefs caught us.
After eating, I went to get my bedroll. Yeah, the cook or his helper unloaded our bedrolls and piled them. While Andy buzzed around me telling of his day's adventure, I searched out my roll. Andy did not like my disinterest in his conversation, but my attention was on the two men standing down at the end of the hooligan wagon. It was Dale Martin and one of the shoe bar hands. They were deep in conversation, at first seemingly unaware that we were there. However, I soon noticed that they kept glancing our way. They didn't say anything. Something in their manner made me uneasy.
You find much down your way?
Seemed like Martin was asking me more than how my gather had been.
We pushed a few head out of those breaks.
There's some rough country north and west. It's easy to miss stock if you ain't looking careful.
I rode real careful, but I'm sure I could have gathered it a little cleaner.
Man's bound to pass by a few head no matter how hard he works, but a few head here and there ain't gonna break any of these outfits.
I don't miss much.
No, I don't reckon you do.
I stepped past him close enough that my bedroll brushed against him and forced him to step to the side. I walked away more than a little on the prod.
That Dale Martin is about the best damn card player I ever saw.
Yeah, I'd keep an eye on the deck.
Now, what's that?
nothing.
Well, you seen Billy?
Not for a while.
I thought I saw him a bit ago. He and Dale were talking.
Oh, yeah?
I left Andy in camp and rode out to the herd we'd gathered that day. Billy met me halfway, riding from the direction of the cut herd.
You don't think I had anything to do with those penned steers, do you?
I believe you.
Oh, you're still pissed, though, ain't you?
I'll get over it, I guess. Just ain't sitting with me too good right now.
No, that's just little Carl's beans working on you.
Maybe so. I bet I fought like a Missouri mule tonight.
Just don't stampede the herd.
I'll try not to.
I need some of those beans myself.
Billy, that's the last time I'll turn a blind eye to rustling.
I hear you, and I'll stand by you.
We'd been out about a month when Hales Bells Gruber asked if one of us would like to make a quick trip back to headquarters. Our portion of the cuts had grown into a large number. He wanted a crew to come on down and help drive them home. We were slowly getting far enough away from our range that the number of our brands was thinning out considerably. Also, there was a good number of cows and calves in the herd. A mixed herd was harder to drive, and the dust, heat, and handling were hard on the young calves. I quickly volunteered for the ride. I was saddling my horse before daylight the next morning when Billy joined me. Somehow, he'd managed to talk Gruber into letting him go. I wondered what he was up to while we made the 60-mile trip in one day's ride, arriving at headquarters late in the evening. Our little Texas horses were tough, I tell you. The next morning, we saddled fresh horses and found Warren in camp with one of his wagon bosses about 10 miles out. Warren was working with one of the ground crews.
You boys decided to quit eating up ranch supplies and playing cards while the rest of us work for a living?
We tried to hide our discomfort over Weirin's obvious knowledge of our rep outfit's recent behavior so far from home.
HB said to tell you we need a few hands to drive a herd back here.
Did he give you a tally of the herd you've rounded up?
Weirin was a big man with a definite grumpy way about him. But despite his jab about what had been going on the general roundup, he did seem pleased at the news we delivered. I handed him a tally written on a scrap of paper.
Ugh, it'll be a couple of days before we've finished up Brandon. You fellas pitch in here and I'll send you back with a couple of hands once we're through.
Ma'am, my stomach's been bothering me something fierce. I wondered if I might get the time off to ride over to Clarendon and see if I can get some Fletcher's Castoria.
I kept a straight face while he glared at me like I was about to be fired.
Never set much store by patent medicines. You know there's no liquor in the roost, don't you?
They tell me it's as dry as a bone.
Is the pain in your gut bad?
Terrible.
Well, go on then. I wouldn't want anybody saying I ignored a dying man's last wishes.
Afraid he'd change his mind, I whirled my horse around and took off for Clarendon without so much as a goodbye to Billy. The thought of being able to look up that girl from the stagecoach with no competition from him lifted my spirits. He could work his butt off branding calves while I did a little romancing. But my elation was short-lived. I hadn't gone a mile before Billy caught up to me.
I told Warren you were so sick that I was worried about you making it to Clarendon.
He fell for that.
No, he's just a good boss, and I offered to mail some letters for him.
You're quite the charmer, ain't you?
I got us a $10 apiece advance on our wages to cover the cost of your snake oil.
Why does all this surprise me?
You know, I never knew you to take sick.
You come with me out of concern for my health?
Well, I guess I come along hoping to get a dose of the medicine you're looking for.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, damn. Can't you just admit you've been thinking about that girl for a month?
And I suppose you can?
Hell yes. This is just about a perfect country, except it's a long way between water and woman.
We don't even know that we can find her.
Dude, speak for yourself.
We arrived the next morning. Clarendon wasn't much to look at early on. You could pass through it at a run and never wind your horse. It showed signs of building, yeah, but was still pretty hard scrabble looking. The buildings were a mix of different types, lumber being in short supply out on the treeless plains. Billy needed a new shirt and asked if I could handle the mail. I took the mail from Billy and we parted ways. Before I went looking for that girl, I intended to find a barber and a bath. I was gonna outshine Billy this time, come hell or high water. Well, I had to settle for a haircut given by the blacksmith's wife, as Clarendon hadn't as yet acquired a barber. The same woman mended and laundered my best white shirt for $0.50. I washed up best I could in a tub of water out back of their shop. By the time I'd finished my preening and mailed Weirin's letters, it was early afternoon. I hadn't as yet struck any sign of Bob Riley, or Billy either for that matter. Careful questioning of a citizen got me directions to Allen's store, and I eventually found it. I found Billy, too. I saw him through the window. He was at the back of the room, appearing to study a new hat. Barbara Allen was helping him, and he was making her smile. My courage threatened to fail me. There I was, the same man who climbed on Bad Bronx and swam swollen rivers and roped outlaw cattle and generally dealt with some danger to my general health on a daily basis, and yet I was scared as hell. I was scared of a little red-headed gal who had stopped her conversation with Billy to study me. Like I said, she was red-headed. Auburn was what most folks would call it. Her hair was dark, except when some light hit it, and then it shone with a red hue. She's tall and slim. There was something about her carriage that bespoke pride. Or maybe that was the way she held her chin up just a touch. I mean, it wasn't in a snooty manner, just like she knew some but you didn't. There was that same bright gleam in those green eyes that I had thought on for more than a month. I could have loved her for just her eyes. That girl was looking at me like I was daft, and I was feeling hot around the gills about then. A snooty-looking gentleman wearing glasses stood behind a small counter.
Can I help you, sir?
I just came to look.
He tipped his chin down and looked over his glasses at me. He waved his arm at the stacks of goods and shelves behind him and scattered about the small room.
Feel free to survey our stock and tell us if we can help you find something in particular.
I'm just looking.
Mm-hmm. Seems to be the trend of the day.
The storekeeper cast a glance at Billy.
Hello, Nate! Have you met Miss Allen yet?
Billy waved his outstretched hand to gesture to her like he was the Prince of Persia or something. He was quite the gent, our Billy.
This is my friend, Nate Reynolds. He's a real talker when you get him going. And when he decides to speak something other than Comanche...
What brings you to our fair city, Mr. Reynolds?
I came a horseback.
Was your horse out front? Oh, I so love horses, especially these woolly little western ponies.
Out the door she went. Billy and I like to have torn the door jam off going at it at the same time. We stopped at the edge of the street, and both of us took our most nonchalant and favorite stances. Dunny stood tied at a rickety hitching rail before us. I don't know where Billy's paint was. Barbara Allen stepped lightly to Dunny's head, and he eased against his tie, eyeing her carefully.
No, you gotta move softly around these western horses, Miss Allen.
Oh, fiddlesticks. He's as gentle as a baby.
And to prove it, she wrapped her arms around Dunny's head and pressed her face against his jaw.
Well, he's a sweetheart.
Billy claims he's the best cutting horse in the country.
Was that so?
Well, he's all right.
Oh, come on, Billy. Tell her about it. I ain't gonna brag on my own horse.
Well, you wouldn't want Dunny to seem immodest, would you?
Oh, you and those big words, Billy. You're sure a talker when you get going.
Piss on you.
Sore loser.
What was that?
Why, I was just telling Nate what a fine day it was to be out on the town with a good friend with such a wonderful horse.
He is wonderful, isn't he?
You could ride him if you want.
She cast a glance down at her dress and then back at me.
Oh, I don't think I'm attired for it. And besides, we don't properly know each other.
Perhaps when you get to know Dunny properly, you might ride him.
Our eyes met across space between us, and for a minute I thought she was going to let me have it. But it never came. And then, she did the damnedest thing. She winked at me.
Perhaps, Mr. Reynolds.
It's the heat of the day, daughter.
Barbara stepped away from Dunny's head and paused at the doorway.
Are you gentlemen's names written in the Lamb's Book of Life?
Why, no, Miss Allen. But I have always felt a strong interest in that subject.
It is a shame that our work finds us rarely in the vicinity of church houses.
Both the girl and the man eyed us carefully. Well,
call me Barbie. That's what everyone calls me. Isn't that right, Father?
Billy stepped forward and offered him his hand.
We haven't met yet.
Yes, we haven't.
Well, Father, this is Mr. Champion and Mr. Reynolds. And this is my father, George Allen.
We shook hands all around, and he looked like he was ready for us to vamoose.
You should come to the church picnic with us this afternoon. Wouldn't that be nice, Father?
Yes, nice.
Well, I always enjoy a bit of picnicking. Don't you, Nate?
Oh, yeah. But of course.
Whenever I think about picnics or Sunday camp dinners, I shall always remember my way back to that little cottonwood stand on the banks of a small creek at the edge of Clarendon. All picnics should be held there, with the sunlight scattering down through the tree limbs and a little breeze coming cool through the shade now and again, rustling the cottonwood leaves above. Oh. There was a long plank table heaped up with potluck offerings of the women of the community, and they fussed over it like hens in a barnyard. The men gathered in casual clusters to visit with their fellow men, while remaining within easy striking distance of the food. The line shuffled along single file through the dust like cattle would travel. If I'd listened close, I'm sure I could have detected a few hungry, pitiful bawls as if we'd all come to the feed trough. I stood there quiet and slightly out of place, a part of things, but slightly removed, as all strangers are. Bobby was helping in the buffet line, and Billy, God help his little politician's heart, was far back in the line, jabbering about farming with a few of the locals, like he knew the first damn thing about farming. I came near to starving to death before I made my way up to the food, but it was worth the wait once those ladies started helping me mound up my plate. I'd been on beef and beans, and the sight of those makings like to have colicked me. I got to stand in front of Barbie Allen for about 2 seconds while she helped me top off the precarious monument of food I was building on my plate. But the threat of being trampled from behind was so great I had to move on from a company. I found a quiet spot where I drank my lemonade and slicked off my plate in record time and kicked back to rooting. I studied the line of people still gathering their food. Mainly, I studied Barbie Allen. Or, to be correct, I studied Billy while he held up the line talking to her. She was smiling again, and my collar started to make me itch even worse. I couldn't help but wonder what he kept saying that was so all-fired interesting. I imagine somebody got tired of waiting and said something to him, because finally he quit the table and made his way over to sit with me. He grinned at me like I hadn't noticed his behavior in the chuck line.
Glad you finally took that turd off your head.
What's that?
Nothing.
Billy eyed me carefully and then turned up his lemonade.
I reckon you like that kid stuff.
What's gotten your dander up? Oh, well, I reckon more friends have fallen out over whiskey, cards, or women than just about anything.
But not us, huh?
Oh, not by a long shot. Well, I guess we can both handle a little friendly competition.
Why have you got a horn in?
I can't see that she's wearing anybody's brand. Although I haven't gotten a chance to check her over close enough.
Damn, Billy! That's a lady you're talking about.
Are you saying a lady ain't got any parts of interest?
You better quit that talk. You ought to know better.
Are you saying a lady doesn't have parts?
No, I ain't saying that.
Well, what are you saying?
I'm just saying that you shouldn't talk about them.
I've already talked about them, and I've already thought about them enough to wear them out. But I can't tell from the look of her to have done any damage at all.
I was up on my feet as quick as a cat. Billy didn't move from the ground, but he was wary.
All right, Nate. All right. You've converted me. I'll not speak slanderously of yonder maiden anymore. I'll keep all mention of her body to myself from now on.
The pressure in my ears abated a little, and I started to slowly unwind. Then I reconsidered what he had said. I didn't know what kind of bargain we had just struck, and sure didn't know if I was gonna like it. Billy jabbed a finger at my lemonade glass.
It's good stuff, ain't it?
Ain't it?
No sooner than I'd sat back down than Billy jumped to his feet.
Come on! They're pitching horseshoes over there. Let's go show them a thing or two.
I looked longingly back to where Bobby Allen had been, but she's gone. I made a quick scout of the crowd under the trees, but still couldn't spot her. Bobby failed to appear after an hour's wait, and I was ready to admit defeat, at least for the day. As I was leaving, I ran across Mr. Allen down where the horses were picketed. There's more than one way to skin a cat, as they say, and maybe it wouldn't be a bad thing at all for Daddy Allen to get to know me.
It's a fine day for a picnic, Mr. Allen.
Mr. Reynolds, is it?
Yeah, but you can call me Nate.
It is a fine day, Mr. Reynolds.
You don't sound like you're from around here.
My daughter and I came from Ohio.
I hail from Kentucky.
He didn't seem impressed. In fact, he began untying his horse from the picket line. Their buggy was close by, and I followed beside him while he led the animal over to harness it.
You need some help?
Is this about my daughter?
Well, I would like to call upon her at some later date.
I don't even know you except for the fact that you come from Tennessee.
Kentucky.
Just the same, that's little to go on in my book. I haven't been in this country much more than a month, and already I've got cowboys loitering around my store every day and mooning over my daughter.
I understand your concerns.
Have you a career or an occupation?
I'm riding for the Lazy F.
I am serious.
So am I.
That's no career. Are you a man of property?
I've never had any trouble finding work.
What is the condition of your soul?
You see...
Are you right with Jesus?
Well, that's something he'd have to tell you.
A heathen! And a smart aleck, too.
Mr. Allen began hitching the horse to the buggy.
Oh, I meant no disrespect.
Listen, we are a Christian family. When Barbara's mother was lying on her deathbed, God rest her soul, I promised her I would raise our daughter right and see to it that she married well. When and if my daughter finds a husband, he will be a man of substance, in good standing with the community and the church. He will not be some drunken, half-wild cowboy.
Have you got something against cowboys?
I am sure that you have some admirable qualities, but forgive me if I don't see you as an acceptable suitor.
Well, I think you're mistaken.
Big hats, $40 pistols, and rackety spurs aren't the measure of a man where I come from.
Well, I best be going. I have a long ride ahead of me.
Young man, have you thought about where you're going in life?
Talking to him was like talking to a fence post. I swung the board dunny and pulled my hat down tight.
I'm going east until I decide to stop, or turn around, or my horse quits me one. Get up!
I was 10 miles east before Billy joined me.
Where you been?
No, Barbie and I took a little walk and, talked a bit.
What'd you talk about?
Oh, just stuff. We didn't get to talk long. Her daddy hunted her down and shoot her off.
Oh, that's too bad.
We just walked a little ways down the creek, but he set into fussing at Barbie about what he called scandalous behavior.
What scandalous behavior?
Nothing. We were just talking and wandered out of sight of everyone. You'd have thought he caught us skinny dipping or something. I was sure I was going to have to whoop the old devil, but Barbie lit into him first. Well, they had quite a set to.
They fought?
There were some harsh words said. I get the notion that they've been butting heads ever since her mother died a couple years back. Seems like he's pretty strict on her. And she ain't too happy with some of his nonsense. She called him an overbearing, old-fashioned tyrant. Whoa. Yeah, that was one of the nicer things I recall.
Yeah, I can see where a person might butt heads with her daddy.
Billy looked a question at me. I went ahead and told him about my encounter with the old fart, as we called him from that time on. When I told Billy about the man's view on occupations and cowboying, he stopped his horse and looked me dead square in the eye.
He doesn't know anything, does he?
Nope.
That shirt-folding button salesman ought to be glad we get down off our horses long enough to talk to the likes of him. I'm certain of something, Nate.
What's that?
He doesn't know one damn thing about cowboys.
Not one thing.
We got good horses to ride. Plenty open country. We go where we please. That means a whole lot more than money.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't know anything at all.
Now you're talking, Nate. If we want to sweet-talk his daughter, well, we'll do it. And if he doesn't like it, he can kiss our calloused asses.
The summer rolled on, and neither Billy nor I laid eyes on Barbie Allen for a long time. The roundup south of the Canadian worked east to about 60 miles west of Henrietta, and then north up into the territory. We worked both the Comanche and the southern edge of the Cheyenne Reservation, where various brands were operated under leases. We logged what must have been 10,000 miles. On horseback. I thought about Barbie Allen constantly, and Billy did too. I know because he told me. Both of us were set on being the object of Barbie's affection and jealous of the other's intentions. For a good bit after our Clarendon picnic, there was a touch of the uncomfortable for each of us in one another's company. It was a subtle contention between us, nagging and chewing at us until we talked less and less, and the old banter between us was all but gone for a time. It was like wearing a pair of baggy, sweaty breeches to work. After a while, the man gets pretty chafed and blistered, and soon he is sore as hell and walking funny around his best friend. We recognized the change that had taken place between us, but I figured we were both too proud and stubborn to do anything about it. Barbie Allen was just too damn good looking for either one of us to let go of, even if it wasn't the actual woman that we both claimed to possess, but rather the notion of her. She was something glorious to carry around inside of us and think upon. Those storybook writers will tell you that we spent all our nights in camp singing to a bunch of cows, or yodeling and plunking on guitars around the campfire. But many a man passed the quiet hours lying alone in his bedroll, awake and staring at the dark sky ahead, lost in his own thoughts. You might work up a picture in your mind of the old home you'd left long ago, or maybe dream on what you'd like to do or see. Bobby was our little dream. And night after night, Billy and I laid down to sleep, each begrudging the other a hard-on. Given a little time, we seemed to have made our peace over that girl. Maybe we both realized how foolish it was to fight over a girl neither of us had a claim on. Now that doesn't mean we forgot about her, not by long shot. Oh, we talked about her frequently. It might sound silly, us acting that way over her, but there were few women in that country and none at all like her. I guess we were about as female-starved and girl-crazy as men can get. If Billy told about her just right, I would get a picture of her so stuck in my head that it would be an hour after I lay down before I could get to sleep. And I know it was the same for Billy, because sometimes when I'd lain there unable to sleep, his voice would come quietly out of the night, whispering like a blind oracle. He'd say something like, "She sure is something." And he was right. There was another thing that helped smooth things over between us, and that was our change in fortunes. I mean to say that we suddenly had more jingle in our pockets. Now, nobody ever got rich cowboying, and by the same turn, nobody ever took up the trade who had such lofty financial aspirations. All those types became bankers and lawyers and railroad men or pimps. A little extra money to spend on liquor, gambling, or trinkets was always a soothing thing. Our path to riches came to us in the form of one certain paint Indian pony in Billy's possession. That crazy little pinto was faster than greased lightning. And once we determined the little paint, as we'd taken to calling him, could run, well, now there wasn't anything short of an act of God that was going to keep the money out of our pockets. None of my crew held anything against a little easy money as long as it came by honest means, like gambling. We ran Little Pain a few times against some of the lazy F horses that were known to be quicker than usual, and none of them could even give him a race. Word soon spread among the outfits on Roundup that our camp had the fast horse, and it didn't take long for someone to propose the first raise for stakes. Little Paint put dust in their faces, and we put money in our pockets. All the riches in the world looked like gravy to us. One after another, week after week, cowboys brought their fastest stock to match against Little Paint, and he outran them all like they were standing still. After a few weeks of racing Little Paint around the Roundup camps, our outfit took on a whole new air. It's a wonder every one of us didn't lose our jobs, but even Hell's Bells hauled himself right into the mix. He was proud as any of us that our outfit had the fastest horse on the roundup. Being a bit older than the rest of us, HB, without nomination, took on the role of manager and trainer. Every night he came into camp and informed us of potential matches, giving us his opinion of different horses and their merits and the prospect of getting a race up. Carlito, the cook, took on the role of groom. And against all cow camp etiquette, he started keeping Little Paint tied up to the chuck wagon. He managed to scare up a bit of grain to feed the horse, and he rubbed the little devil until his coat was shiny and slick. You never would have known that he was the same long-haired, naughty little pony we stole off the reservation. Andy became our official jockey on account of his slight weight. We all strutted around some, but he outdid us all. After every race, he insisted on recounting the affair in a play-by-play fashion, highlighting the brilliant strategy he had deployed and the subtle jockey techniques he'd made use of to bring about victory. We were all so happy counting our winnings, both past and future, that none of us pointed out the fact that Little Paint was so damn fast that a monkey could have rode him to a win. The biggest part of the general roundups in the Panhandle was over by the 4th of July, and we finished up our last work just east of Mobiti 4 days before the holiday. We'd worked a big circle between the Washita and the Salt Fork of the Red and had a herd gathered to work about 2 miles south of the Sweetwater. I was sitting by the fire finishing up my lunch when High Card Henson rode up to the fire. Two strangers were with him, but stopped off at a distance and waited. Now, old High Card weighed about 100 pounds, stood about 6'6", and the only thing longer jointed than him was the handlebar mustache he kept tugging down below his jaw while he pulled his horse up and hooked a leg over his saddle horn. He was a professional gambler, and if you doubted the fact, all you had to do was ask him.
You winning so much, you've taken to traveling with bodyguards.
I pointed to his fellow traveler sitting off behind him.
No, that ain't it at all. Those are some of my professional associates.
That a fact?
Well, we've a camp back up the Sweetwater a little bit. Tents set up with tables and such. There's liquor, women, cards, rooster fighting, and, well, just about everything a man who's been out working all summer could desire.
You making the rounds advertising?
Yes and no.
Speak your piece.
He twisted in the saddle and glanced back at his friends, followed by a studious observance of the sky.
Well, we heard you boys have a racehorse in camp.
We might.
Well, that's a coincidence, because there are a couple of gentlemen in our camp that are sure getting frustrated. They hauled a couple of good horses all the way up from San Antonio a month ago and ain't been able to find a single bit of competition for their animals.
Is that so?
Well, that's a fact. It seems they're beginning to doubt the quality of horse flesh in these parts.
Maybe they ain't been looking in the right places.
Maybe.
Maybe they're long on talk and short on funds.
Oh, no, sir. Those boys got money by the sackfuls and are game and ready to risk a little of it should a worthy challenge for their horses come along.
You're meaning they would like a little match race with our horse?
Well, now, I don't doubt you boys have got a horse you think is fast, but how's your financial situation?
You going into banking, too?
No, it's just that those racehorse men up on the Sweetwater are getting pretty bored with the action around these parts, and are willing to entertain a little betting on a much smaller scale than they're used to.
Why don't your high-rolling racehorse men come down here themselves if they want to dicker up a match?
You saying y'all might be interested?
We might. Of course, we realize that it would be professional horsemen and imported stock that we would be dealing with. And we would expect certain considerations.
They've invited y'all up to our camp to palaver with them tonight.
Where do we find you?
Just ride west until you hit the Sweetwater and turn up it until you see our fires.
I reckon we can find you if we're interested.
High Card nodded and turned his horse. His companions followed him as he left. I watched him for a minute before turning back to the fire. Andy was sitting there watching me.
What are you looking so happy about?
You smell that?
What?
Money. Lots of money.
Where?
Looks like we found ourselves a horse race.
Woo-hoo! I want to know one thing. Where did you find those suckers?
Billy took the news just like I'd walked up to him and handed him a draft on the entire funds of the Denver Mint. All of our camp was excited by the prospects of a racehorse for bigger stakes. None of us seemed to have the sense to be concerned about our challenges. Billy had the final say in any proposed race, as it was his racehorse, and he asked me to go with him to visit the Mobiti Gamblers' camp. Andy wanted to come along too, but we knew he'd get drunk and wouldn't make it back to work the next day, or hell, maybe for even longer. HB seconded our opinion and ordered Andy to stay in camp. We hit it for our horses, and HB liked to have trampled down the back of our britches legs following us.
Won't you miss your beauty rest, HB?
My hell's bells. You boys need a grown-up along for wise counsel and a mature outlook.
Showing some good sense, Billy gave up the argument and climbed aboard his horse. He and HB took off in a lope, with me following along behind. The ride to the Sweetwater was only a 2-mile jaunt, and we had the fresh rode off our horses by the time we hit its banks. We turned up the creek and followed it for a few miles until we saw big fires lighting some trees ahead. They had picket lines strung up between the trees, and we slipped our cinches and tied up there. We made our way over to the fires. There were 2 or 3 tents and a couple of top lean-tos set up, with a few long tables laid out between them and the fire. That crowd wasn't the sort you'd see in Sunday school. There must have been 20 or 30 men gathered around the fires, a couple of what passed for women. As we walked up to the largest fire, a big, burly, greasy buffalo hunter type shoved a bottle at us. Billy eyed the amber contents swirling around in the bottle and the filthy hand that offered it. It would have taken a box of 45 shells to knock the lice off that fella. HB took the bottle and turned it up.
You other fellas ain't drinking?
I believe they are here on other matters.
Back at the edge of the firelight, a man sat propped on the tailgate of a wagon. One elbow rested on a crate containing a fighting rooster, and the other arm was hooked by a thumb in one armhole of his vest.
I think these are our racehorse men.
Yeah, we got one.
Good. It so happens that I do too. Several of them, in fact.
Little old Mexican boy came leading a horse into the firelight. That gelding was huge, and he obviously was a thoroughbred. Long, flat muscles ran smooth and sleek over his large frame. He must have stood 16 hands and was as long as a freight train. He was fine-boned for his side, and his hocks and cannons were high, flowing down into pasterns that were long and springy. His long ears twitched alternately above his slender head, and his big, soft eyes were dark pools, reflected tendrils of intertwining flame and shadow floated upon their depths.
Hell of a horse, but he ain't a sprinter.
At some unseen gesture or signal, the boy led the horse away. He soon returned, leading another animal. The second horse was a chestnut filly with a flaxen mane and tail. They had rubbed her until she shone in the firelight like the fire itself. Her pale mane and tail almost sparkled. She stood just short of 15 hands, and where the thoroughbred spoke of distance and fast endurance, she bulged with muscle.
You got some awful good-looking horses there.
And runners, too.
Now, who might you be?
Colonel Andrews at your service.
Well, Billy and the Colonel shook hands, and I could tell by the length of time they held that shake and the look on Billy's face that the Colonel was putting the clamp on the smaller man.
Well, if we stand here any longer, we're going to have to dance.
The Colonel gave Billy a long look as he let go of his hand.
I haven't seen your horse, but I have heard that he is a runner.
Yeah, you might have heard that.
Would you be interested in a little match race?
Well, that depends on what you got in mind.
I'll race you for $500, and let our associates take up what betting they will between themselves.
Oh, well, that gelding looks to be quick, and you can't hide his breed. I'd have to have some odds.
No odds.
Even money?
Even money, and you race the filly.
You don't think we're good enough to run against that bluegrass special?
No. As a matter of fact, I think you know he isn't a sprint horse. I went to New York and purchased him. I shipped him by boat to Galveston and then trailed him overland to here. I did all this at quite some expense and trouble.
And after all that money and trouble, you won't run him?
Oh, yes, I'll run him. I've run him at Houston, San Antonio, and I plan to run him at Denver.
Why not here?
If you wish to race him at 8 and a half furlongs or more, I would seriously consider it.
What the hell is a furlong?
It's an eighth of a mile.
Why, that's over a mile.
Exactly.
A quarter mile against the mayor.
Even money?
You give me 2-1.
On what grounds, may I ask?
Why, you probably imported her here from China in a balloon or something.
I can't hide her quality. And wouldn't attempt to, Mr.
Champion.
Mr. Champion. I'm not going to attempt to doctor up some horse to look slow when it isn't. Or trick you into believing I don't have an honest-to-goodness racehorse when I do. On the contrary, that filly is out of the Denton mare.
We didn't know whether to take him serious or not. The Denton mare was the outlaw Sam Bass's good horse. Legend had it that it was she who led him to gambling and thence to shadier things like robbing trains and such. She's supposed to be one of the swiftest horses ever to hit Texas sod.
Wasn't the Denton mare by Steel Dust?
Steel Dust died along about the end of the war. The Denton mare wasn't old enough to have been out of him.
Steel Dust was a horse that broke half of Collin County, Texas in 52 by outrunning the good horse Monmouth. Or at least the half that bet against him. That race happened before I was even born, and folks were still talking about it. Most conversations about Texas running horses started and ended with Steel Dust and his progeny. Those big-jawed, heavy-muscled sprinters that gave the word bulldog to the early quarter horses.
She was in fact sired by Cold Deck, who was a son of Steel Dust.
They say he was a hell of a horse.
I would venture to say that he was the best sprinter of our time.
They always claim that nothing ever outran him.
Yeah, they say that about all of them.
It is his propensity to pass on that speed to his offspring, which interests me.
Who's your filly sire?
She is by Old Billy, who was a son of Shiloh. And Old Billy's dam was a daughter of Steel Dust, called Ramkin.
2 times back to Steel Dust?
Her second dam was a daughter of Printer that raced with some success.
With blood like that, she ought to eat her feet off of a silver platter.
I went to some trouble to find that filly and buyer.
What's a race record?
I always let the handicappers do their own work.
But that matters a lot.
My filly is open to world. Given terms of the race can be agreed upon. If I suspected you lacked a competitive animal, I would have showed you some of my other horses.
You've got more?
I have others with me, but not so fast as Baby.
That what you call her?
Yeah.
Nobody spoke for a while, and I could almost hear the wheels turning in our heads.
2-1 on $400, and we run it a quarter of a mile.
5-3 on your horse, and we run at 350 yards.
What's 5-3 figure out at, Tennessee?
We put up 400. And he puts up roughly 660.
Call it 650.
Call it 500 at your end, and we run at 400 yards.
600 my end, and we run at 375 catch weights, ask and answer start.
Who steps off the distance and picks the course?
You and I will step off the distance in a matter equally agreeable to each of us. And the course will be laid out here along the creek to both of our satisfaction.
When?
Day after tomorrow at noon. We have a deal?
Billy took his hand and shook. Colonel seemed pleased and turned to his bottle on the tailgate.
Shall we have a drink to seal our agreement?
You already shook on it.
Yes, but a drink is much more enjoyable format, don't you agree?
That little Mexican boy was there lickety-split with some cups. And once he poured us all around, the Colonel lifted his glass high in a toast.
Here's to honorable men and fast horses.
Oh, that's damned good whiskey.
I bought that off a man I met down the trail.
Well, they sure know how to make it where he comes from.
After the drinks, we made our way back to our horses. We tightened the cinches and mounted up. Billy turned his horse to face us. We parked nose to nose to talk.
How do you think we made out?
The distance is too short. That mare looks like she could jerk a stump out of the ground.
I agree, she looks like she ought to have early speed, but we got some odds.
All in all, I'd say you've done well.
That fellow back there doesn't race for a hobby.
You believe that filly is really out of the Denton mare?
No, he's full of shit.
Yeah, it might be true. You never can tell.
Well, I know one thing. That filly of his may not be out of the Denton mare. But I bet that we're gonna find out if Little Paint can run. Mm.